This is the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, featuring your host, Jenna Erlandson.
Hey guys, and welcome to the Bridge of the Faithful podcast. I'm Jenna, and we're all traveling this faithful bridge together. These episodes are just my documentation as I search to understand what faithfulness really means. You can find this and all other episodes at www.botfpodcast.com. You can also connect with me at facebook.com/botfpodcast, on Instagram at botfpodcast, or you can email me, jenna@botfpodcast.com. I'm so excited. We're here today with someone that is super special to me. She was my Isaiah's preschool teacher last year in the middle of all the crazy COVID stuff. So I feel like our time together got cut short. She has an amazing story with her infertility and then also with her amazing son, Knox. And I'm just really excited to share that hope and that story and all the amazing things that God has done in her life and Knox's life through all of this. So thank you, Ashley, for taking the time, coming and sharing this awesome but hard story.
Thank you.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about your start into the infertility journey?
Okay, so my husband and I got married in May of 2007. I was currently still in college, getting my degree in education. My husband was working out in, he was in the electric field, so he was in construction, so he was had a steady job. But because of that, of course, his insurance wasn't very good. We decided after I graduated college, got a job and with insurance, you know, we'd be responsible and we'd take our time and start our family when we felt like we were ready. So we started trying to conceive, and you know, months went by, and you know, we were just starting to get kind of discouraged. Other family members were getting pregnant and made it really hard. So we decided to finally seek a doctor, and they referred us for the standard early testing. They found the semen analysis was a little off, so they sent us to the fertility doctor in Cincinnati. He told us we could do IUI. So we decided we would go ahead and go that route. You know, we didn't feel like there was any major reason we couldn't conceive. So we'd be one of those couples. We could start a little bit of infertility treatments, not be a big deal. Well, we ended up having 5 failed IUIs. Here we are thinking we weren't going to be this couple that we're going to have such a hard time conceiving. Parents had no issue, you know, his parents. So we didn't understand why we were having these issues. We took a few years off. We had family or friends just kind of mentioning IVF or adoption, and we just weren't for sure where we wanted to go next. Before we decided to kind of take a break, I grew up in church. My husband didn't, and he looked at me and said, "If it's all about God's timing, why are we going through all this?" And I looked at him, I said, "You're absolutely right. Why are we going through all of this?" So we ended up taking about 3 years off of any fertility treatments and, you know, but still actively trying, not understanding why this wasn't happening for us. And finally, we kind of got to the point that we just felt like it was time to try something else. So we reached back out to our infertility doctor, and he said our next steps would be IVF. That was, even though I knew that was a good possibility and that was probably the next step, I think hearing him say that was devastating for me. Well, for us, it was so hard to fathom why we would have to pay thousands and thousands of dollars, get in debt for things that happen so easily for so many people. So that was a really hard pill to swallow. So we went ahead and told our families we were starting IVF treatments. Of course, everyone was very supportive, praying for great things. It took a few months to kind of have everything ready. I had a great egg retrieval. They ended up getting 10 good embryos. So that was just amazing numbers. We were really excited about that. And again, I kind of got back to, okay, it's just going to take one time. We just need a little bit of help. It's not that big of an issue. It's just going to take that one time and we'll be fine. So we did one embryo transfer and it didn't take. We did it again. A month or two later, it took and I was pregnant. And this would have been in, I believe, March of 2016. So in March of 2016, I was about 5 weeks pregnant. Just couldn't believe it was finally happening. Well, we ended up miscarrying that that pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So with the miscarriage, of course, we had to wait a couple months, and then we decided to go ahead and do another embryo treatment, or an frozen embryo transfer. But this time we did two embryos. This time I got pregnant with twins. So we were just beyond excited about that. I started having some bleeding again. We went and did some ultrasounds, and they could see both sacs, but it may have still been too early for a heartbeat. So we went back again, and then they couldn't find the heartbeat. So I lost both of the babies. So again, after miscarriage, we had to wait a couple months, and then we did another transfer with two embryos. They both took again. We took a little weekend away in Nashville. I started bleeding again. So we got home, went to the doctors, and I had miscarried again. So the doctor had found a fibroid that he wasn't convinced that it was causing any issue, but because of having three miscarriages in 1 year, this was all in 1 year, lost five babies, he wanted to go ahead and do a surgery to remove the fibroid. And it was a pretty intensive surgery because they did pretty much a C-section incision. They got that, and he was really optimistic that this would fix the issue of my miscarriages, because really there was no other reason why it shouldn't be working. We did that right after, or no, it was right before I had this surgery. My mom had spoke to one of her friends that went to church, and there was this missionary from Africa. They wanted him to pray over us. They said everyone he prays over, he is just touched by the Holy Spirit and they become pregnant. We met with this missionary. We went to the church, and he was home from Africa for their gathering, and he prayed over us around this. This room was just full of believers and just believing that everything he said, you know, this was God just speaking over us. And he said that within a year, you are going to have a child, and that child is going to be a testimony. I ended up having my surgery then a few weeks later. And by the time I healed from that, we did another embryo transfer March 1st of 2017. This one, I was finally able to carry full term, which is now my son Knox.
So before we get to amazing Knox, can we go back just a little bit? Mm-hmm. And you touched on this, and I think it's something that everybody with infertility goes through. I remember dealing with this every day for at least a year of the why. Why is this happening to me? When for me, it was, we're in such a great financial state and we have a good marriage and a family, and I'm seeing all these people who are not in the same stage of life as me being able to get into having a family, or even people who didn't want to get pregnant but then got pregnant. I'm like, I've been trying for 3 years. Why is this happening? There was a lot of that. So how did God meet you guys in that, together or separately, if it was something just for your husband or just for you? But how did God kind of show up when you asked why?
I kind of think for both of us, as hard as it was to go through this, you see so many marriages struggle through infertility. I feel like for us, our marriage got stronger through infertility. And I think that's the biggest way I can think of him showing up, because I can't say all my worries were wiped away. I can't say I didn't question. I still question. It's so easy for some, or why people can get married and get pregnant and, you know, everything just goes perfectly in order like you imagined it would be. So I can't say that I had those moments where I'm like, it'll happen, it'll be okay. But I think just the biggest thing, our marriage got stronger through it, and we were able to just really lean on each other and depend on each other, and knew that whatever happened, we were going to be okay. You know, we were going to be strong because of it. And also now thinking about it, also, I had followed a blog of a woman who actually, even now, they are still in their waiting, and they have an adoptive daughter. But one of the things she always said was, if God puts in the fertile soil of your soul, he'll come through. So I didn't know what that was going to look like. I didn't want to give up the hope that for me, it would be able to get pregnant and carry my child. It doesn't look that way for everybody. And so it, you know, it may be through adoption. It may be through, you know, other means, but I think that was helpful for me, that I was able to really see his goodness in all of it, that he was is going to be with us, and it may not look like we want it to, but either way, I knew that he meant for me to be a mom one way or another. You know, for me, it did turn out that I was able to carry my own child. It wasn't an easy road. I was able to carry him. And so, you know, it is hard because it doesn't always look that way for everybody, however you become a parent. That really meant a lot to me. And that's something I still pass forward to people who are waiting in that waiting period for their family.
I think that for me, it was almost like God had to change my expectations a little bit. When, I don't know if I touched on this on any of the other episodes where we talked about this, but when we found out we were pregnant with Eli, I didn't realize I was pregnant. So we were 9 weeks pregnant when I found out. But 2 weeks before that, my husband had been laid off from his job. So all these things that I was saying, hey, God, we're in this great financial state. And God took that away. And I do think he did for good reasons. I don't think like God punished us by taking away the job, but it was just kind of the next step that he was putting us in. When your husband loses his job, that's already a rocky start for your marriage. So I wouldn't say we were in a bad state, but we were definitely not in as strong of a marriage as I was claiming to have before. For us, when we found out we were pregnant with Eli, God sat me down and he said, you were claiming that you were financially stable and you had a great marriage and all these things that you were doing, but you were forgetting that I'm the one that takes care of your child and I'm the one that gives you those things to take care of him. So I'm going to prove to you that not only am I going to take care of Eli, but I'm going to take care of you guys and be the one that provides for him too. That is not how I pictured it to happen. And it's not necessarily how I prayed for it to happen, but it was so much bigger and so much better God's way, even though it was scary for some times.
Absolutely.
So speaking of scary, tell us a little bit about your pregnancy with Knox.
So like I said, we had our embryo transfer March 1st of 2017. And, you know, I heard in another sermon actually very recently about, and you touched on it in one of your podcasts, about the woman who she had kind of given up that expectation of being able to become a mom because she was worried about being disappointed. And God blessed her with a child and then ended up losing that child. But, you know, she just hung tight, hung on to that. I think what resonated most with the sermon that he touched on that with was it hurts to hope. Every IVF treatment I went in, I was so hopeful. Okay, this is it. And then it would fail and I'd lose the baby and you're just questioning, why am I so hopeful? But the next time you're just as hopeful. So this time I felt like this was different. I had that fibroid removed. We're going to be okay. So about the same time I started having a little bit of spotting. This time it stopped and it never had before. So we're like, okay. So we went in for our first ultrasound, which we had never made it that far with hope that things were still looking good. So even when we went in, our fertility doctor, I told him, you know, I had some bleeding and he sounded concerned, did the ultrasound and he found the heartbeat. I've never seen my husband cry, but I looked back and we just met eyes and we teared up. You know, that was just the most amazing, amazing sound we had ever heard. And because we had prayed for this moment, you know, we had been pregnant before, but never even got to hear our children's heartbeat. We went through a few ultrasounds with the high-risk doctor and everything was looking great. I was released from the high-risk doctor at 12 weeks, went to my regular OB, and I went in for the first trimester screening. And I actually had taken my nephews with me because I thought, you know, they could hear the heartbeat and everything will be great. The ultrasound tech wanted to look at something a little different. So again, I'd been through this, so I didn't really think anything of it. She said, well, we may have found something. And so she took me to the doctor's office or to the room. And of course, here's my nephews in there with me. And the doctor comes in and tells me they found some things. They found a protrusion around his abdomen. The lining of his neck was thickened, which is an indication of something severe or something going on. I called John and I told him, and I called my mom so she could get my nephews from me. And we ended up going straight down to Kettering that afternoon to the high-risk doctor. And that's when they told us that she thought it was, he had an omphalocele, which is when there's organs outside of their body, which could probably explain what the lining of his neck being thickened could be. At this point, they thought maybe the tip of the heart was in the omphalocele. They just really weren't for sure. So this was at 12 weeks. So then I did a few other ultrasounds there, really no change. She pretty much told us that we could, you know, one of the best options for us would be to abort him because he probably wouldn't have any quality of life if he even made it full term. We told her, you know, it's just not an option. And so that was really hard for us because she continued to kind of push it. And I understand as medical professionals, they have to give you all your options. But after we told her it wasn't an option, you know, it really bothered us that she kept kind of pushing. At 20 weeks, we finally, so 2 months later, we went down to Cincinnati Fetal Care Center, which is just absolutely amazing. They have an amazing team of women's health doctors on the team and pediatric surgeons and pulmonologists and, you know, just all these people on this team. So we went down there. I had an MRI, ultrasound, an echo. They told us that day that from the echo, his heart was intact and he had what they call tetralogy of Fallot, which is one of the most common heart defects you hear about. And they said it could be repaired when he was 6 to 9 months old. Never do you think you're relieved to find out your child has a heart condition, but that it can be repaired. For us, we didn't even know if he was going to be able to survive if his heart wasn't even intact. So when they told us it was intact and it could be repaired, that was a huge relief. And again, you don't expect to be relieved that your child has a heart condition. The following day, we went back and they went over all the results. And they said, and then he also had the infallocele. And his liver was in it, which is one of the harder organs. So it would take several surgeries to even get that back in. His lungs were half the capacity they should be. So then just all this other stuff, because of the way the infallocele and the anatomy of everything grows, his chance of survival were very minimal. We could choose to either be aggressive with treatments, have him there at Cincinnati, they would do whatever they could, or we could just have him at a local hospital and just spend what time with them that we wanted or that we, you know, that we had. So again, you know, that wasn't an option. We wanted to fight for this child that God had given us. So that we, as soon as we told him, no, we want to be aggressive. They asked if we had a name. We already knew at that point his name was going to be Knox. So they referred to him as Knox. So I think for us, that meant a lot too, that, you know, they were going to fight for Knox. They weren't just going to fight for this baby. It was going to be for our son, Knox. We went back a couple more times. We still followed up with our high risk doctor. See, that was in July. So about August, he developed fluid around his abdomen and his heart, which especially in two places can be extremely fatal. So again, our high-risk doctor recommended, well, we may have been past the point to legally abort. Again, never an option. Have weekly appointments. And if she saw that we were starting to lose him, we could deliver him so that we could have some time with him alive, which it's just hard to even say that because, you know, again, we were having faith that we were going to have this child and he was coming home with us. He was going to be fine. We contacted my small group and, you know, we had so many people praying. I just constantly listened to a few of my favorite worship songs on repeat, nonstop. We went back for another ultrasound a couple weeks later and the fluid around his abdomen was gone. Then we went back another week later. My mom was with me and I told her, I said, I don't think I see that fluid around his heart. Sure enough, the doctor came in and the fluid was gone from around his heart. It was just completely gone. Another one of God's miracles through all of this. We went ahead and we had our last appointment then to September at Cincinnati, going through the whole gamut of testing again, and his lungs had gotten better. The infallocele wasn't quite as big as they had maybe thought. The heart condition maybe wasn't as bad as they originally thought. Went ahead and I had to go move down there for a couple weeks before I had him so that I could go to doctor's appointments and I could just be close in case I would go into early labor. Thankfully, I had a cousin that lived down there, so I stayed with her for a week or two. And then we were able to get a room at the Ronald McDonald House until we delivered him. We ended up making a plan and having him on October 31st of 2017. So touching on that, that was just, you know, it was almost right to the year that he prayed that and told us that. Just another one of God's miracles and just speaking through us through all of this. So Knox was born, again, just a lot of health issues that some things they found. And that was a long time that we spent in the hospital. So yeah, that was a long journey to finally get him, you know, 6 years into our infertility journey.
I want to go back a little bit to a point that it just really struck me how powerful it was. And you talked about how having an
name for Knox, and how they respected that name was kind of maybe pivotal in the attitude and the care that you got. First of all, why did you pick Knox? Because I'm curious.
A lot of people have asked us that the whole time we were in the NICU, and we really don't have a good reason. I wish we had a really cool story by it. It was just a name John had heard. He had sent me this meme of this ultrasound and wrote Knox Benson on it. And this was while we're trying, and I said, I think I like that. I kept it because I was like, I want to remember that name because I really like it. And as soon as we found out it was a boy, we both just like, yep, it's Knox. There was really no great story behind it. It's just something we both really liked, and just kind of stuck with him. So, and now having him, he's definitely just a Knox.
I love it. Okay, so did you feel a change when everybody knew his name? Did that kind of feel different when people were talking about him by name?
Yeah, I think it did. It made it more real that we were going to have this son, but honestly, it kind of made it more scary too, because you want to prepare your heart. You want to try to protect your heart. So I think it was really scary at the same time, because it's like, okay, you're giving this child this name that you just love, and what if something bad happens? And all the emotions of going through infertility, and you know, if anyone's going through infertility, you just know you're up one day and the next day you're down. So it was kind of the same thing, you know, even with the name, it was just comforting for him to have that name, and for people to call him that, to know that he's a real person. And but at the same time, you know, it was scary too, because you were building this bond with this child that you didn't know what the outcome was going to be. So it was reassuring but scary at the same time.
So you had Knox, and he stayed in the NICU, I'm sure, for a while. What were all the things that he had to deal with before he was ready to come home?
Something we had prayed for was that we would hear him cry, because of not knowing how his lungs would be when he was born. That was one of the things we prayed for. We just want to hear him cry. Well, we got to hear him cry. And again, so kind of talking through all of this, it's kind of like that beginning and ending moment, because I remember locking eyes with John, and we both just couldn't believe what we were hearing, and we teared up, and takes me back to hearing his heartbeat for the first time as well. So we got to hear him cry, and the nurse took John over, and he got to meet him, and the nurse was amazing. She took his camera or his phone and took a bunch of pictures, and I didn't get to see him. They took care of me and everything, and John got to spend a little bit of time with him. Well, then they actually got to take him past all of our family, which we didn't expect that to happen. So my family actually got to see Knox before I did. So they wheeled him by, and the team was amazing. The one surgeon's like, okay, let's see who's not going to cry. And he was an amazing doctor through all of it. So they all got to see him, and I went back into recovery, and my family was in and out. And, you know, just looking back, you know, it was scary because it was such a bittersweet day anyway. You know, you look forward to the birth of your child, but at the same time, it's like, okay, I could keep him safe. He was in my womb. I was able to be connected to him. But now what's going to happen? It was definitely a scary day. But then looking back also, it was such a peaceful day because, you know, I'm waiting for the doctors to come in and even tell me, because, you know, it does run through your mind. Are they going to come in and tell me he didn't make it? Or, you know, what's going to happen throughout the day? The doctors came in and they had found a couple extra things that they weren't planning on. But some things were a little better and kind of that give and take. Finally, see, I had him at 8:30, and about 3:30 that afternoon, they finally took me up and I could see him. And I actually have it still on video. The nurse that was at the CIC, he was in the CICU at this time. I got to kind of get close to him and see him. And at this point, he wasn't intubated. Kind of knew she was kind of breaking the rules a little bit, but she's like, hold on a second. So she picked him up and kind of laid him in my arms. And I have this video, John's recording this, and you hear at the end her yelling at the cardiologist because the cardiologist was giving her a look. You shouldn't be doing this. So, you know, from 8:30 to 3:30, I finally got to hold and see my son. And he was actually in the hospital for a while. He was about a month old. It was right around Thanksgiving. He actually got really sick. They weren't for sure what it was. They kind of just thought maybe his body was finally failing, that he just couldn't keep up with staying healthy, because once they found that he also had a CDH, which is a diaphragmatic hernia. So there was a hole between his chest and his abdominal wall. Because of that, they had to intubate him right after I got to hold him for the first time. He was intubated for a while, and that was mainly to keep all the organs from being pulled up into his chest. He could not come off his support until he had that repaired. So when he was 3.5 months, they were waiting for the skin around his abdomen to grow. So he had kind of a membrane protecting everything, but they had to keep that protected so that didn't bust. That would have been really bad. Once that skin grew up around it, about 3.5 half months old, he had a major surgery. We're in the waiting room. We have all of our family and friends, you know, waiting room full of people. I can't imagine having any more peace than what we had. Our son is in this operating room with these amazing doctors, and God is just there orchestrating everything. We had such a peace. We're laughing and all this. And so it was a major surgery. They were able to repair that hole, his something attached to his pericardium around his heart. So they had to detach that. And they told us they would probably take out his appendix because later in life that could cause some confusion with his anatomy. And he ended up having two appendixes, and they closed his belly and all this stuff. All day surgery. It was so long, but he did amazing. He recovered amazing. He was off pain meds so quick. We had to wait a couple more months, and then he had his heart surgery. I just remember that peace and laughing while our son is on a heart and lung bypass machine, you know, and his heart stopped. It's just crazy to think how much peace we had. And, you know, how can you have all this peace through all this? You know, God was just working through this. We had our worship leader coming. He came down and sang songs and worshiped over Knox. And we had so many powerful moments through all of this that people just, our community was just absolutely amazing. And the support that we had of our family. And through this, I had to go back to work. We were fortunate to have family down there with them all the time. And, you know, our nurses gave so much credit to our family and to us. He is where he is now because of our family and the love and things he had. One of his nurses shared a little bit about our story. Of course, not giving names. Her daughter said, where there's love, there's miracles. That's just been our story through all of this. And so he had that major surgery, and then he wasn't able to come off of respiratory support. He was extubated for about 6 weeks, and then he wasn't doing well, so they'd have to reintubate. And then he got rhinovirus, so that's why he couldn't come off of support. You know, we did several attempts, and he just wasn't able to breathe on his own. We had the extremely hard decision of having to go with a trach. And we just didn't think that was ever an option. It wasn't until after his heart surgery that one of the attendings up in the CICU said, has anyone ever said anything about a trach? And I said, no. I couldn't even think of the word without just breaking down into an absolute puddle, because I thought, no, this isn't right. He's been through all of this. Why are you not answering this request? We don't want him to come home on a trach. We want him to be an independent child. And a trach, you have to have in-home nursing. And probably through everything, one of our hardest decisions. But as we were told, it was absolutely the best decision we could have made for him. We got him home. So we had a lot of training to do. We had to find nursing. He had to have night nursing set up before we could even come home, which we waited 5 weeks just to get nursing set up. We ended up being in the hospital total for 10 months. We finally came home on September 5th, 2018, after 310 days in the hospital.
Wow. So now he just turned 3.
Yep.
Where are you at now with his journey?
So right now, we are actually just next week planning on going down to Cincinnati. We're looking at the decannulation process. We kind of think we have an idea of what that's going to look like with 6 season and everything coming up. It could be pushed back. Right now, we're going to see how everything looks, get to talk to his team, kind of get their ideas on everything. And then the plan is to possibly, he needs an airway reconstruction before that can come out, which is a whole new fear all in and of its own, because to get that done, they will take the trach out, which is the exciting part. But through that, they will have to repair the airway. And then when they take the trach out, he'll have to be intubated for 5 to 7 days while that airway heals. I was just looking at pictures earlier, you know, coming up on my time hop, you know, from 3 years ago with him being intubated. And, you know, I got emotional about that because I'm like, okay, we're done with that. Oh, wait, no, we're not. You know, it's going to bring back all of those fears. Because when we were in the hospital, 310 days, you learn a lot, you remember a lot, and you know, you're not going to forget anything. But by God's grace, you do. I mean, that is just a huge blessing because we're not living in that constant anymore. But you go back to the hospital, you definitely have a lot of PTSD and, you know, all of these fears come rushing back. You know, we saw him fail so many times. I mean, we've seen him victorious many more. You know, we just have to remember that as we go into these next steps. It's a scary surgery. It's a scary process, but the end result will be absolutely amazing. And he's got an amazing story to tell.
You talk about how choosing the trach was hard. And I want to stop here because I know there are a lot of special needs moms out there, including myself. And in different ways, my story is very different than yours. I want to dig in a little bit to that hard decision because for me, it was hard to decide to go into therapies for my son, because that was kind of admitting that there was something going on. It's a moment of having to admit that things are worse than you want them to be.
Yeah.
And then when you finally get over that and you make that decision, it's almost a relief and a peace that comes over you. If anyone's out there listening and they get to hear this part of your story, what advice would you give someone who's at that, I have to make this hard decision, I have to face something that I don't want to face, and it's not the reality that I wish it was? What advice would you give to someone as they're trying to make that decision?
I think probably just to be patient. Patient with yourself, patient with God. It's not going to be easy. It's just not. I mean, he tells us that it's not going to be easy. We're going to go through trials, but through that, you'll have perseverance. And so, you know, we had so many failures. You know, we saw him fail, not being able to come off support, knowing that he was going to have a trach. He was going to have all these specialties. That was hard. And we didn't understand why we were having to do that. But eventually, you will get to the part where it's beautiful, where you see your child thrive, just doing these amazing things that they do. Kids are so resilient. You know, I could look at cases of children that I have in my classroom now. They adapt. God created them in this way. Especially special needs kids go through so much more than most adults will in their entire lifetime. God knows Knox definitely has, and most every other child who has had these trials, you know, they'll go through so much more than what any adult will ever in their life. God created them to handle this. He created you to handle this. So many people say God will only give you what you can handle. It's not true. He gives you him to get you through it. That's really the only answer, is just trust in him and know that he'll get you through it. You don't know what it's going to look like. You may never know why we felt like we had this story to share with people. And that's what we've always said. While it wasn't easy, Knox is going to be that testimony. We have that testimony to share and help people. So find people around you who may have. It may not be exact. I mean, God knows we never found anyone who had our exact story. No one will find someone with their exact story, because I think that's what was hard. People are like, I understand. And you know, that's your common go-to. You feel different. I mean, that's how I felt through infertility. No, you don't know how I feel. But find people that you can be open with and talk to about, because people do want to help. Find that small group of people that you can love on. They can love on you, and just trust that you're in the right place at the right time.
I mean, our stories are so different. My first child from my infertility story is also a special needs kid. And these things that I've been struggling with, especially this year, I feel like 2020 has just been so huge in reminding people what's hard. And then also God's bigger. So thanks for sharing all that, because I needed to hear that. So your infertility story is not over.
It's not.
I was wondering if you feel comfortable sharing kind of where you are in that story right now.
So we got home with Knox in September. September of 18, October, I find out I'm pregnant completely naturally. Honestly, I had a little hard time with it, because I thought, you know, we just got Knox home. You know, this is his time. I feel like I felt guilty, but you know, it didn't take long and we realized, okay, we're gonna have two under two, but gosh, what a blessing after all of this. We were so excited and you know, this was gonna be great. Well, I ended up having a miscarriage. I had a little bit of spotting, but again, it stopped. So I thought, well, maybe this is just like when I was pregnant with Knox. Well, then I went in, I was about 9 weeks and they weren't able to find the heartbeat at that appointment. So, you know, again, we had a few options. I never had to have a DNC. I was always able to go naturally with everything. And so I wanted to go that option. That was extremely hard, very painful, an ER visit. Then after that, I was angry, because I thought, no, I wasn't asking for it. It hurts to hope, because I wasn't asking for this child. I wasn't asking to be hurt. Why do I have to go through this again? At that point, it was kind of hard too, because now I feel like something's missing, because, you know, here we are, we're happy with Knox, knowing we wanted to have children in the future. You know, we were happy, but now I feel like something was missing. And then that makes me feel guilty, because I'm thinking Knox isn't enough. And of course, that's not true at all. So then we kind of kept trying, well, not thinking a whole lot about it. And then this past May, I found out I was pregnant again, completely naturally. We're not for sure where we stand yet on, because we'd still have frozen embryos. Do we we still want to go down that path again? You know what? We don't know yet. So I get pregnant again. Things were going pretty well. I was having some bleeding, but I actually was able to go and have a few good ultrasounds, got to see the baby's heartbeat. But again, 2020 throws it at you, and I was never able to take my husband in with me. So he got to see the ultrasound pictures, but he never got to hear the heartbeat. So, you know, we went on vacation and, you know, I was still bleeding, but then they finally found a reason for it. They found a hematoma. So they said, well, that's the reason for the bleeding. We got to the point where we actually had the blood work done. We were going to make sure the chromosomes were good. We were going to have to find out the sex of the baby. The blood work wasn't run through right. So we got the results, or I got the text saying that the results were available, and I looked and everything was blank. And so I was really disappointed and angry because we were going to have this little gender reveal with our family. And, you know, I was 13 weeks at this point. You know, I just didn't understand why this was happening. Well, then that night I started having some pains, and I just kind of thought, you Google early pregnancy pains, and I just thought, okay, it's nothing. I'm fine. I just some abdominal pains. I ended up passing the baby that night. I think that was the hardest on me. I never made it that far before losing it, you know, without being too graphic. But again, we're all human here. You could see the baby in there. You know, it was just extremely hard. And I still feel like this is one of my most emotional miscarriages. You know, we found out it was a little girl. I think that made it harder because, kind of like with the name, now you know that Knox is going to have a baby sister. And, you know, and now he's even been talking about baby sisters. Is he foretelling us something, or is he, kids are so instinctive about things, so who knows? But, you know, we still want to have children. We don't know which way it's going to go. It definitely didn't end after we had Knox, you know, this amazing story. It's still been very heartbreaking to not be able to grow our family how we had hoped and dreamed.
Thanks for sharing all that. I know that's hard to walk through over and over, and to be able to share that because you want to give hope and you want to share God's faithfulness in your life. That is huge, and it's going to be blessed in so many ways. And I'm thankful that I get to be a part of that. So thank you for trusting me with that story. Absolutely. And those stories, the whole story, all of that. I have actually several friends that have had that type of miscarriage where it's kind of traumatic and hard to remember. How has God shown, even in this moment where you can see your baby and see the perfect little toes and feet and know that God had a purpose for that baby? You may not know what that is. Part of this purpose for this beautiful little girl was that her story, you get to talk about God's faithfulness because of how he was through her life, her whole life. Mm-hmm. You get to tell this to people right now. So she still has a purpose and there's still beauty in her life. So what would you say to someone who's going through that right now? And I know it's still fresh in your heart. How would you want her legacy to be?
I feel like kind of where you were going with that kind of answered it, because I don't know right now. I don't know why we didn't get to have her bring her home and Knox to be a big brother. But I think if anything, it's just kind of like with Knox. We have a testimony with him, but now we can share our grief while we're still in it. You know, I'm not going to pretend I'm in a happy place. I don't want to say it like that. Not that we're not in a happy place. I don't want to pretend that the pain's not there and that we have all these answers. So I think the best thing to take from that to share with people is that it's okay to be there, but that's where God wants us to be. I look back, I spoke at a Walking Through the Wilderness women's thing. You know, someone shared that without going through the wilderness, you don't get to see the good. God prepares you through the broken places. I feel like when she was speaking this, as hard as our infertility journey was, God used that. If I would not have gone through my infertility journey, I would not have been the woman and the mom that Knox needed me to be when I went through everything with him. If I would have just, you know, had this easy journey, would I have been able to be the mother I needed to be? That really resonated with me. And I think that's where a lot of people going through infertility or going through pain right now, it's hard to see now, but God is using your brokenness to prepare you to be the mother or the person or the woman that he wants you to be. So I think that's just the best thing to take away from any heartache and any hurt that you're experiencing right now.
I think this is a perfect segue to talk about your verse. So we're here. We're getting to the end of what the story is now. And for those of you who are listening, this might be your first episode because Ashley has some pretty amazing family that I think will probably listen. And I hear, first of all, you out there that are listening just because you love Ashley. First of all, thank you for listening. Second of all, just seeing her life and the support that you guys have given her, I'm going to say thank you because that's been a testimony to me. I'm new to the area. God placed my son in Ashley's class last year, and I don't think that was an accident. I'm super thankful for her in my life and the friendship that we've developed from that. So to her friends and family, I know the impact that you're making. And to those of you that are listening to this and maybe not been through an infertility journey, but are listening to this because you want to know how to support someone you love, that right there shows so much love. Just thank you to all of you who are friends or family, to people in infertility, or those of you who want to build into your story and figure out what God's doing with it, or wherever you are in this. If you go back to my very first episode of this series, it's called Infertility is Never the End of the Story. This episode is going to be the last of my series with infertility. And I think this is kind of perfect because in whatever situation you're in, whether that's infertility, job loss, cancer, depression, anything, when God writes a story, he's better than the best author in the world. And the best author in the world does not leave the main character of the story without hope or without resolution. And we serve a God who loves you more than we could ever imagine. And he loves your babies that you've lost, or he loves the babies that are yet to come more than you could ever love them. When you mix those together, the story that God is weaving is that he's going to use every single hard thing in your life, and he's going to show you hope. He's going to give you peace, just like he gave Ashley peace in times that didn't make sense. And he's going to never leave you in that. That's never the end of the story. You're going to be able to look back and see the amazing things that God was doing. I'm just so thankful that Ashley was willing to kind of wrap that up for us. So if you want to go back to listen to it talks about all the times that God used women dealing with infertility in the Bible, huge number of them. And not only that, but so many of them were in the lineage of Jesus. So he used them to bring hope to the entire world. Infertility is never the end of the story. So Ashley's going to talk about her verse, which may seem interesting at first, but it's such a great wrap up to this whole series. And I love the story as to why she picked it. So can you tell the verse you picked and why?
Absolutely. So the verse I picked is John 10:10. And so when you told me to pick a verse, I mean, I didn't even have to think about it. This just came right to me. So it's, the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but I have come that you may have life and have it to the fullest. We chose this verse when we were looking at a design to make Strong Like Knock shirts. You know, we used as a fundraiser to give back to the hospital and give back to Ronald McDonald House. So this is on all of Strong Like Knock shirts that we sold, almost 700 shirts. That was so special to us. And looking back at it and just really digging into these words, you know, I think of how it applies to any place in your journey and kind of what I just touched on. You know, Satan was trying to take this story and take Knox and destroy us. But God said, no, you know, he said, no, this child is going to have a purpose. While it took longer than what we had anticipated, kind of quickly going back to the missionary that prayed over us, he sent us a video from Africa when the pastor from here in Ohio went to visit him. And he said, you know, I know it's taking longer, but that's because there's more God wants to do. So I think that kind of really applies to this verse as well, because he's promising us a full life. So even though Satan and evil comes to destroy you and make you think that you're not worthy or you're not good enough, God is saying, no, cling to me and you will have a full life.
I don't even know what to say, because this interview has been probably one of the most powerful ones I've had. I think it's interesting that you picked this verse. I think it's because so many people focus on that first part of the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. You kind of see that and it's like a threat. It's hard and scary, but you took that and you said, yeah, Satan came in and he tried to destroy me, but the end of that is, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. That's what you chose to focus on, not the scary Satan part that you've had to live through and push through. And yeah, obviously there were moments where that was overwhelming, but you chose to focus on, and this is obviously God's faithfulness, is that he's not only coming to protect you, but to give you an abundant life. Like, yeah, you know, Satan, he comes to do these horrible things, but I'm going to make you thrive. It's not even, I'm just going to protect you and you're going to be fine, but you're going to be stuck in the corner scared, but I'm going to help you thrive despite that. And I love that that's how you wanted to leave people and give hope in that. So thank you so much for everything.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So that's John 10:10. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the fullest.
This has been episode 41 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, entitled Abundant Life in Loss with Ashley Philby. For show notes, go to botfpodcast.com/episode/41. You can find us on social media at Facebook or Instagram.